Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartzdraber. On today's show, driverless cars. This is a particularly hot topic these days as driverless Ubers hit the streets in Pittsburgh and as testing of this new potentially life-saving technology goes on in places like California and Nevada. Recently, NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, put out guidelines, regulatory guidelines, on how driverless cars should operate. Joining me to discuss this is Mark Scribner, research fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, which put out an article responding to the Obama administration's proposed rules on driverless cars. Mark, thanks for joining the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So I've been reading some of the press around this issue, and a lot of it is favorable. It says that this is an example of government regulating in a smart way, recognizing the potentially life-saving value of driverless cars, and allowing the freedom to innovate while protecting consumers. There's been a lot of cheerleading. Are you coming here with sour grapes, or what do you think about these rules? I mean, is this something to celebrate or something to be skeptical about?
I think by and large, the guidance document fills a void, and positively so, where the feds hadn't acted and states were really questioning of how they were going to attempt to implement state level policies. However, that being said, a lot of the positive press doesn't get into the nitty gritty, and there are some things that are fairly troubling that we'd want the agency to address, and certainly we'd want to have Congress exercise its oversight powers.
So, what do you see as the biggest? So, let's start with the good news, right? Let's give credit where credit is due. You know, other than the fact that they've now recognized this industry and kind of signaled to states that we don't want to have 50 different standards and some crazy hodgepodge of rules. Do you see any other benefits before we tear this apart?
Well, I think one of the biggest benefits, well, one benefit, which is may seem insignificant, but I think has been underestimated the power of this, is that the fact that NHTSA actually ditched its previous levels of automation definitions, which came out in its 2013 preliminary statement of policy and adopted the Society of Automotive Engineers levels of automation. One issue that we've been seeing is that you had engineers talking about various levels of automation, whether or not this is fully automated, whether or not this is a lower level partially automated, say like Tesla's autopilot, and you had lawmakers, regulators, insurers wondering what the hell anyone was talking about. So I think the fact that NHTSA recognized that it trying to reinvent the wheel when the engineering community had already gone in a direction, and really all of the policy research community had already gone in one direction, that was a smart thing to do. Another good thing that NHTSA did with this guidance document was say very clearly that the state should not only not develop this patchwork, but the states have no business operating an agency that performs vehicle safety performance functions.
And that might be counterintuitive to people in the free market community. I mean, there's this principle of subsidiarity that is often heralded as, you know, we want regulation or we want government power to be as responsive to the people as possible. But I've often said that tech policy is kind of a different animal, and you don't necessarily want local city councils making rules about driverless cars. You don't necessarily even want state governments making rules about driverless cars. And even if the guy who occupies the White House isn't exactly the most free market person ever, is it fair to say that driverless car policy should be a federal issue?
As far as safety performance standards, yes, that is absolutely. I mean, you're talking about regulatory decisions that impact the fundamental design of automobiles. We're talking about a national market. We would want, you know, we had problems with California's tailpipe emission standards, which basically forced the rest of the country to re-engineer their vehicles to meet this one state's standards.
Because they have so many people there and everyone in California drives, so it was a large enough market that one state set rules for the other 49 just because the state kind of had market power, so to speak.
Absolutely. And that's what you would have. So if you would talk about delegating this authority to the states, which I think would be a really bad idea, you would not be having You would not be having the major three automakers and some of the smaller ones and then the foreign automakers all coming together and saying, well, we're going to build a spec in each state. That isn't what they would do. They would look at the biggest market. They would look at whatever California had done most likely. And that is what they would say we are selling throughout the country. Other states, you can fall in line or otherwise, you know, your citizens are going to have to drive across state lines to buy their cars.
So at least NHTSA might be sending a signal to California, don't go too crazy because we have some federal rules in mind and we don't want you to set the policy for the whole country.
Right. Without saying the name of California, that is exactly what NHTSA was doing because California had back in 2012 enacted an automated vehicle statute and the resulting regulations that have come out of that through the California Department of Motor Vehicles have been atrocious. You know, and not to just completely blame the California DMV because it was in fact an incredibly poorly written bill. And no one really saw what was going to happen. But fundamentally, you had the California legislature believe that the DMV was capable of being a mini NHTSA, and that was not the case.
So let's get to some of the actual policies and whether they're good or bad. I mean, the good news is that they're recognizing the industry. They're saying that it's good and that it will eventually save lives. But what are the actual policies? Let's start with performance guidance for automated vehicles. I mean, what is NHTSA recommending?
So what they're recommending, there's basically a 15 set here, and it talks about all sorts of things that NHTSA thinks the developers ought to consider. These range from, you know, things you'd think of as NHTSA traditionally being responsible for, namely crash worthiness. But they also talk about things that NHTSA's really never looked into before, the operating domain of these vehicles. When is it appropriate? In what kind of roadway conditions is it appropriate to operate these vehicles on throughout the various levels of automation? What kind of weather conditions? Things like that. There's also they want the developers to consider privacy and cybersecurity, which is usually not cybersecurity has become a new thing for NHTSA, but privacy generally is not something that is brought up in auto safety regulation discussions. So there's a number of new things that NHTSA is basically saying, developers, you should go ahead and look at this. The good news is the developers are already doing this. So these 15 sort of categories are basically these were heavily influenced by the way that the development had already been taking place and things that developers had already been doing. So the guidelines themselves are not problematic, but there are certain things of how NHTSA is attempting to push these supposedly non-binding and voluntary guidelines out that should concern folks in the development world and also members of Congress.
And then you've got jurisdictional problems. I mean, we've talked on this show before about how multiple regulators being the cop on the beat can add to confusion. It could make for uneven standards. I mean, if you look at like the FCC's privacy rulemaking, that will create a separate standard for broadband privacy as opposed to, you know, the standards that Google has to, you know, adhere to. And, you know, you mentioned that an agency that is not normally involved in cybersecurity and privacy, but because vehicles are now connected, I mean, we did a show called The Internet of Cars a couple of weeks ago talking about how cars, you know, they come with a 4G LTE connection now sometimes. They've got other things that make them a connected device. Is there a danger that hysteria over things like cybersecurity and privacy could impede progress that could save lives? I mean, we're talking about driverless cars being poised to get rid of 94% of vehicle accidents, which are caused by human error. Yet there are probably a lot of groups that are going to say, well, first you got to figure out the privacy angle, got to make sure everyone's privacy is protected, or you got to guarantee cybersecurity before you go forward in this. And is there a danger that those thorny issues, which are ever evolving and complicated and not easy to solve, will hold up this technology because NHTSA has hinted that it wants to deal in this space?
I'm actually less worried about NHTSA on those issues, and I'm more worried about the FCC. You know, recently over there's an ongoing issue over dedicated short-range communications, which is a protocol that NHTSA wants to mandate for vehicle-to-vehicle communications purposes.
That's a necessary component of a driverless car future would be that the vehicles on the road could communicate with one another.
Most likely, yeah. I mean, you can imagine a world in which they didn't, but most likely, and we're going to have connected vehicles, whether it's to other vehicles or to infrastructure or to both.
Right.
But you know, recently, public knowledge and I think OTI and maybe a couple other groups sent this petition to the FCC, asking them to basically shut down progress on the V2V DSRC. Thing, which there's been a spectrum battle over there for the past few years, until they develop automotive cybersecurity and privacy standards. And to me, it is ludicrous that you would have the FCC essentially making automotive safety decisions, an area in which they have no expertise. At least you could say for NHTSA, if they're going to consider privacy and cybersecurity issues, I don't think that they really should, but at least they would have safety in mind. Whereas, you know, some of these groups, their motivations may be they don't like the idea of using this spectrum band for non-safety purposes, for commercial purposes. So therefore, they're going to have the FCC muck with federal auto safety regulation. I think that's completely absurd, not just from a policy standpoint, but also from just a safety standpoint. Why on earth would you want to have the FCC getting involved in auto safety policy?
Yeah, I will note that Tech Freedom declined to sign on to that letter for much the same reason. We are concerned at any position that says something like privacy, which is a very complicated issue with a lot of layers, that somehow that needs to be solved, whatever that means, before we can make progress with driverless cars. I mean, just we need to be a little bit more comfortable with the idea that there's going to be trial and error. There will be some mistakes. Maybe there's going to be an instance where privacy is not 100% protected, but maybe it's better to take these things on a case-by-case basis rather than a bright line rule saying, stop this industry until it figures out this thing. Now, so we dealt with the performance guidance. Number two was the state policy. We already talked about that a little bit earlier about, you know, just kind of signaling to states that this is not your area. And if it is going to be your area, you should make sure that your policy tracks closely with ours so that when we eventually make rules, they work. But something we talked about before the show that you're particularly concerned about is kind of this catch-all, right? I mean, one of the issues that came out even in the press coverage of this is that there's this idea that you need to announce to the government when you're about to make something new. And if the regulations don't cover it, then they're just going to kind of make it up. I mean, what do you see as the problem with these, quote, modern regulatory tools, this idea that NHTSA has to be flexible to keep up with new products?
Right. So they make a number of recommendations in that section of the guidance. But the two that bother me most are moving in the direction of the European Union, but actually moving in a even beyond that and into a worse setting. What NHTSA was contemplating there was pre-market approval. And traditionally, since the Vehicle Safety Act of 1966, how auto safety works in the United States is a manufacturer, they build to federal motor vehicle safety standards, which are administered and enforced by NHTSA, but they do self-certification. So basically all they're saying is it's a promise that we're meeting these guidelines. And then NHTSA does some random selections, follows up, selects a vehicle and tests some of those, but they don't test all of them. What pre-market approval would do, it would require that every vehicle off of a production line, one unit from each, would need to be tested by government regulators. So a manufacturer would have to turn over a vehicle that comes off the assembly line, hand it over, and then wait before it can offer that to consumers.
This is the opposite of permissionless innovation. This is, I want to innovate, but I have to wait for approval.
Correct. And, you know, and as bad as the federal auto safety regulatory regime is today, and I think it adds excessive delays and raises costs, but at least developers, manufacturers, once they're satisfied that their vehicle is safe enough to operate on public roads, they're allowed to offer that to consumers, and they get it tested. They hire firms to do third party testing. They have people within their companies who make sure that they're meeting the federal motor vehicle safety standards. But they don't need to, they would do that anyway. But what NHTSA is basically saying is, well, once you do that, you need to send us a car and we're going to look at it again. And that's, I think, a problem. You know, people have said in the past that the fact that we don't have pre-market approval or type approval, as it's called in Europe and Japan, that we're basically limiting the U.S. export market, because then you have to send those vehicles over. Even after we get them tested in the United States, we need to send those vehicles over to Europe or wherever, and they have to go through a battery of testing to gain access to those markets. On the flip side, if we were to adopt this pre-market approval standard in the U.S., we would basically be denying U.S. consumers, and the United States is the largest vehicle market in the world, access to these vehicles as soon as possible. So you're talking about lives saved on American roads then, that we'd be denying ourselves by moving in the direction of Europe and Japan.
And it's worth noting that NHTSA's mission is to save lives, and that the purpose of these guidelines, whether you like them or not, is to promote an industry that will eventually save lives. So we need to be careful when we look at guidelines from an institution that claims that that's its mission. We need to be careful to make sure that that's actually going to foster that mission. And if, as you say, that one of the effects of these guidelines is that we're going to have slower release of self-driving cars, it's going to cost more to deploy them. And there's this precautionary principle. Is that not that might not necessarily be in accordance with the mission, which is to save lives.
Absolutely. And this is something I think NHTSA should look at or should take very seriously. I think this is something that Congress should look at. But the good news is that right now NHTSA is not authorized to do pre-market approval. They would have to go to Congress, ask for that authority and receive that authority. And I don't think Congress is right now going to consider a proposal that basically turns 50 years of U.S. auto safety regulation on its head. And does something that we've long recognized is inferior, or does something that we've long recognized is inferior to what we've been doing. I think the real problem is that Europe and Japan have pre-market approval authority. It's not that the United States doesn't. So I don't think we need to harmonize, up to their more onerous level of regulation. I think, if anything, they should consider moving away from pre-market approval and looking towards self-certification and other tools that could allow these vehicles to come to market sooner.
Yeah, maybe that's a competitive advantage for the American market that we don't have this thing. So why in the world would we just relinquish this competitive advantage by instituting the regime they have in Japan or the EU if we can outcompete them because we have a more favorable environment? Now, I just want to ask you, these are guidelines, they're not rules. So is there any, they made a big point about saying, oh, these are just guidelines, it's, blah, blah, blah. Is there any reason to be worried, or is there any reason to think that these won't eventually become rules? Is the distinction between guidelines and rules and even a real distinction at all?
Well, I think it depends on whether or not guidelines are used as sort of a backdoor, rulemaking. But here there are some troubling aspects. Well, one which isn't particularly surprising is that they're saying that the safety assessments that they're recommending developers conduct now and submit that documentation to NHTSA, that they are likely going to mandate those reporting requirements in the future. Not particularly surprising, not ideal, but not the worst thing in the world. What I find more troubling, and actually really troubling, is that they go on and on about how all of these standards are voluntary, that the this guidance document is non-binding, but then in their they basically say, state agencies, as whoever the lead agency you pick in your state to administer this, as you in the future start administering testing permits and deployment permits for these vehicles, bake our supposedly non-binding guidance into that requirement. So in effect, what NHTSA is telling states to do is to mandate our non-binding guidance, which
asking the states to do their work for them.
Exactly. I mean, because NHTSA basically, they're talking out of both sides of their mouths. They're, in one breath, they're saying, you know, we are going to, you know, this is only, this is non-binding. You know, this is purely a guidance document. And then, you know, a few paragraphs later, they're talking about, hey, states, mandate our guidance and require all developers in your state who are seeking permission to operate from you to comply with our non-binding standards. So I think that's something that Congress should be very troubled about, because, you know, Congress has brought this up before about NHTSA perhaps moving too fast, perhaps moving too slow. But what a federal agency should not be doing is really, I think, being dishonest in saying that, you know, this is a guidance document while also maybe attempting to twist some arms with different government agencies to sort of do their dirty work for them.
So where do you see this going? I mean, to wrap up the show, we've got the guidelines out. Certainly the business community, states, Congress, there might be some response or no response. I mean, where do you see this going in the next few months? I mean, of course, we've got an election year. As you suggested earlier, it's unlikely that Congress is going to give them the authority to do pre-market approval. But your prediction on the effect of this announcement?
Well, you know, NHTSA, to its credit, has opened up this guidance document to public comment. So in 2 months, comments are going to be due on that. NHTSA has said repeatedly that they plan to regularly update this document. So maybe they will take some of these criticisms into account and draft better guidance in the future. Who knows? Stranger things have happened. But also, I do expect congressional oversight in the new year to begin. We've had statements from the Senate Commerce Committee and the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee indicating that they want to take a look at what NHTSA is doing. So I think in the near term, that's what we can expect, more avenues for commenting to regulators and more meetings.
Well, listeners, look out for those comments. I mean, it sounds like the type of proceeding that my organization, Tech Freedom, and yours, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, might have something to say. I mean, that's one of the rare opportunities we have to comment on regulations before they take effect. So we'll be tracking this issue and perhaps do a follow-up episode. But that's it for today. My guest has been Mark Scribner, Research Fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Mark, thanks for joining the show.
Thanks for having me.
Check out his article on the CEI website. We link to it in the show notes for today. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Tech Freedom. Send us an email at media at techfreedom.org. Let us know what you think of the show. Feel free to pitch topics or guests. Find this podcast in the iTunes store, where you can leave us a review, because it will help others find the show. Thanks for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.